The following episode of FOFOP is classified MA. It contains some coarse language, some nudity, drug references, a sex scene, time travel, terrible Batman impersonations, a Charlie Clausen pronounced Clausen-shaped hole, and mild coarse language. FOFOP advises that the program is not suitable for persons under the age of 15, and minors must be accompanied by an adult guardian or priest. This is John Deake speaking.
Hello and welcome to FOFOP. I am Will Anderson and joining me, guest Charlie. Yes, that's what we do on this podcast. We introduce our guest as guest Charlie because it's a really old joke that barely made sense at the time. Certainly doesn't make sense out of context 4 or 5 years later, considering I haven't done this podcast for nearly a year, Justin. In fact, there might have been some people... There might be some people who think this podcast does not exist anymore. That is not true. It is just in hiatus. It is slowly making its way to 300 episodes. It really sprinted to about 250, and then the last 50 has been torturous.
Sounds like it summed up, getting older, hasn't it? Do you know what I mean? Like you race through your 20s and your 30s, and then you just kind of crawl to your 50s, don't you?
Oh, man, if I get good sleep on the weekend, I'm still tired on a Monday now. I used to get no sleep on the weekend. Go to work, watch Changi, get it out of my system, go to work, everything will be fine. You posted a photo of us online the other day. Yeah. Where did you find this photo?
So I was, funnily enough, I suddenly have all this spare time. And so I decided to use it as an opportunity to do some clearing out of the files, etc. And it was in a little folder squirreled away at the back, and I pulled it out, and it was... the funniest photo that I'd seen of us in ages. And I remember that day, funnily enough. You know, sometimes when you see things and you go, oh, I wonder what that was. And it's like, I remember exactly what that day was. And
it was Fours Festival, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was Fours Festival in Lawn, which they had to cancel this year because of the bushfires.
Yeah.
But Fours Festival at Lawn in 2000 and...
I think it was 2001.
Because, so New Year's Eve of 2001 going into 2002 or the other way around?
No, going into 2002.
Okay, so we had clearly bounced back from September 11.
We weren't going to let the terrorists stop us from wearing tracksuit tops and having fun at the Falls Festival.
If we don't have a good time at Falls, then the terrorists have already won. That's obviously what we were thinking that day.
Yeah, and we gave the terrorists brand new targets, and that were... our four pupils.
I did look at that photo from 2001 that you had posted on Instagram. That was a copy of a newspaper article, and I thought if a police dog saw that Instagram post, he'd still bark.
He would have a nervous breakdown looking at that. I was like I couldn't even look at the camera. Like I'm pulling an ABBA move, looking to one side. And but that was the festival where, I don't know if you remember this, but we did 4 spots at the Falls Festival, 2 on the first, 2 on the second. On the first day, we had Terry Siarkis doing support for us. I was hosting them. You were headlining. The second day, a young Charlie Pickering came down and he did the support for the 2 spots. And I remember we had a big audience in the first show. And then by the last one, by the fourth one, it was so packed that people were standing on the outside of the tents looking in. And I remember you finished your set with a call back to a joke that you'd set up in the first set that we'd done on the first day. And it went so well that we celebrated by sitting side of stage watching George while a light rain fell on us. And it was the nicest light rain I have ever felt.
It was, as comedy gigs go, creating something organically, you rarely get to experience what we experienced that weekend at the Falls Festival. Maybe it was partly to do with the fact that it was the first celebration people had had since 9/11. You know, I know, I don't mean to say that in a trite way because I'm thinking a lot at the moment with what the world's going through. What will be the reaction when we get to stop doing this and start, you know, getting to go out and do things again? Will people celebrate the idea of touching each other? Will people celebrate the idea of being in rooms together? Will there be a almost more celebration? We'll appreciate the things that we had grown accustomed to because they were taken away for a while. And maybe there was even that atmosphere of that in the air that year, because I remember this gig, this series of gigs, but it felt like it was just one gig, as one of my favorite comedy memories of all time. Because, yes, it was in like this comedy tent earlier in the day at a big rock festival before that became sort of a mainstream thing they did. And it just grew organically with people really digging it. And so it was like you were in a movie and they were making a biopic of like Queen or whatever, and so they're playing a 200-seat gig and then they're playing a 400-seat gig and then suddenly it's a 2,000-seat gig. And that really just happened to us over 2 days. And, of course, the core people who'd been there on the first morning, the reason it kept growing was they would come back and they would bring other people. And so, yes, I remember doing a callback to a joke that I'd done in that first, and there was enough people who had been there the first time that it got a really, really huge laugh. And I thought, comedy's never going to be more fun than what just happened here.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It was. I love the idea of the biopic of the gig getting bigger. Before the first one, if it was a biopic, I remember this of saying, "Man, they're jumping up and down for a band, and then I'm going to go out and host stand up." Like, and I remember the person side of stage saying to me, "Trust me, they'll be ready for the stand up." And I was like, "Yeah, okay." And then as soon as the band finished, everyone just sat down and it became a stand-up gig. And then as soon as we finished, everyone stood back up and got back into whichever band was playing.
It isn't always like that. I famously was standing side stage when another dear friend of ours, Anthony Limo Lehman, was doing Falls Festival and we were doing the comedy. And Licky Lee. Yes. Oh, I think a band had gone late, and then so the audience that were there were mostly there to see the thing that was after the comedy, which was Licky Lee.
Yeah.
And so suddenly the comedy was not performing to a room full of people who wanted to see comedy. That was performing to a room full of people who wanted to see Licky Lee, not Licky Limo. And
now Licky, we know where the flaw in his plan was. He should have introduced himself as Licky Limo, Licky Lee's dad.
Licky Limo, the Australian Licky Lee show.
Yeah. Oh, God, I was going to go with the Down Under experience, but I don't feel comfortable with the word Licky in it.
SAFM's Limo, as he's, best known to the world.
Yeah, because of us.
So Limo went out there and this crowd were just, like, you never had a chance. Yeah. Like, someone threw a full can of, he does this, he tells this story in his stand-up now, but somebody threw a full can of beer at him. I was on the phone. Put it this way, this is how the gig was going. I was on the phone to my manager saying the words, "I am not going out there." Like,
while also,
I cannot face these fucking Licky Lee fans.
Yeah. I love the indefatigable spirit of Limo, that he's watching whoever was the MC. I forget. It was a friend of ours who was the MC who... I remember Limo said he got up and did. He said, I'll do about 10 and then bring you on, and did like 97 seconds and then brought Limo on. And there was still a part of Limo that was like, I reckon I could get him. he thought he could win him over.
It was an amazing thing because there's this moment towards the end where he realizes, and when I say towards the end, this was not a long period of time he was on stage, but it would have felt like the longest gig of all time.
Yeah.
And, I need to point out before, also, I wasn't on this show. I was on my phone to my manager. We were just there hanging out with Limo. I was on the phone to my manager saying, I'm not going on to a gig that I wasn't even meant to be going on. Oh. This is how horrifying.
Just in the off chance someone just sees you and says, you want to get up.
He walked off and somebody thought I was going on. I was like, I know I'm not on this gig, but I need to reiterate, I am certainly not going on this gig. And at the end he did what is an old street joke, because he decided in his mind, these Licky Lee fans, these like alt music fans, I'm going to leave them with the least alt music joke of all time. Do you remember what joke he closed with?
Is it something about peanut butter and jam?
Almost, you're close. So it was, what's the difference between marmalade and jam? You can't marmalade a cock up your ass.
Holy moly.
And then he just walked off. And I said, get me another one of my management. I need to point out I am not going on the show.
Can you ring previous managers? Get them on top of this. Well, you know, if you're going down, you might as well go out and start, right?
So it's been one of those years where a lot of things have been cancelled, you know, like the Force Festival got cancelled in the summer because of the bushfires all over Australia. And I remember at the end of 2019, and I know these things are arbitrary and, you know, it's just a moment in the calendar and, you know, like all time exists at once and everything. So, but the idea that I was done with 2019. It had not been the most fun year in my life. In fact, I felt like I'd had a couple of crappy years and I was really looking forward to 2020. And even throughout the fires and stuff, we did a lot of really positive stuff in our community, the comedy community, around raising money for the bushfires.
Yeah.
So TOFOP, you know, my podcast I do with Charlie, we raised $100,000 for the bushfire victims. And so it felt, even though this like tragic thing had been happening, I felt like here's a great way to start the year with positivity. I myself have been doing work that has been positive and helping people. And I'd written some really good material around the bushfires and I was a bit angry again. I felt really passionate about my stand up and all those sort of things. It's so funny that like when you have like a chronic illness, you know, like you always think it's always weird if you get something else as well. But just because you have bad hips doesn't mean you can't get like skin cancer on your face. Like one doesn't rule out the other. It's not like everybody gets one terrible thing they have to deal with. Often they all come at once. And for the world, it really feels like we were just getting our head around the idea that in the next 10 years, we're going to have to deal with all these incredibly tough circumstances around the planet changing and climate changing and what the repercussions of that are going to be.
Right.
And then suddenly we're in the middle of this global pandemic, unlike anything that we've seen in our lifetimes. It's how are you doing? How's your world?
Well, it's funny. The I'm always I try to be careful when I talk about my experience with the fires because I was living in the city, and so I was very much, you know, in a safe place while dealing with it. But the smoke that descended over Sydney was quite claustrophobic. My place doesn't have air conditioning, so it's always been fine. During summer, you can open up the doors at night, heat goes out, you know, but this place was like a furnace, and I didn't really sleep very well. And, you know, and it's awful to see those images over and over and over again. And then I felt very much like you at the start of the year. It was like, well, you know, a lot of people stood up. A lot of people came together. It's always nice to see that sense of community, not just in the comedy community, but in the entertainment industry in general, just stand up and really do something positive, and ordinary people going out and helping out. There was something really positive about it. And I was watching everything that was going on with the virus overseas. And it seemed like it was slowly getting out of control. And I have to be honest, it's not because I'm that prescient, but I'm a big fan of the American basketball, the NBA. So I was kind of watching it through that filter and watching them start to talk about it weeks before any governments were talking about it, etc. And I just started to get this creeping dread that this was going to get really serious. And then when it kind of hit, I have to be honest, I was a bit like, yep, I saw this coming and this is what my life is now. Like, I haven't seen anyone in person in like 2 weeks.
Part of the reason we're doing this podcast is like really just so that, you know, we can have a face-to-face Skype conversation and have a little catch-up,
exactly.
You know. It's so important right now as everybody is isolated, particularly at a time where we would have all been together. You know, that was one of the great fun things about this year. And when I talk from a personal perspective, please, everybody who's listening, know that, like, you know, part of what's going on at the moment is a world problem. And, you know, within that world, being Australians, you know, we have a reasonable safety net. Being, you know, older people who've, you know, built our careers and stuff and can rebound, we have a safety net. I've, you know, like, there's all sorts of All that, please, you know that, you know, there are many people on the front lines of this who are struggling hand to mouth. And it's, you know, it's in no way wanting to disrespect any of the genuine struggle when you talk about these, like, minor struggles.
Yeah,
you know, like,
for sure.
You know, like, it feels like you need to contextualize that, but I still think it's important to talk about the minor struggles as well, because they're real to us. And if we don't talk about them during these times, then, you know, you don't process them during these times, and then that becomes a problem later on. And so we were all going to get to hang out. We'd hung out a little bit in Adelaide. We'd had such a fun social time. We were all having a good time with our shows and being back, you know, I was back doing stand-up, and I was just, there was a lot of our mates doing really great stand-up shows around where we were, and it was just a good fun time. And then we were staring down the barrel of a whole month of that in Melbourne, you know, doing shows and seeing our mates and seeing our mates do great shows and seeing people that we don't know do great shows and doing heaps of interviews for the podcasts and getting involved in other people's shows and appearing on other people's shows and just doing this part of our job that is so fun, you know, the best fun bit of our job. So, like, if you don't then try to replace that with something else, if you just go cold turkey on that, then I think you're going to really, you know, have a, and whatever your version of that is, that you suddenly have a massive slump, because you're like, not only am I not seeing anyone, but I'm not seeing anyone at the time where I was going to see everyone. This was my time where I get to see everyone.
Yeah, I'm meant to be staying with you at this very moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, so I think you're really on the money as well with having context. I think that you never want to go to the extremes. You don't want to be downplaying what you're experiencing, and you don't want to overplay what you're experiencing. You want to be very present in the moment. You want to acknowledge, this is where I'm at. I can see over there what these people are dealing with, and it's much worse than my situation. But I'm also not going to forget that this is still something that I have to deal with personally as well. So I think context is the key word there.
Well, part of the way that we help everybody is by helping ourselves as well.
Right.
Particularly in a time where you're socially isolated, like, you've got to use that time in a productive way, because if you don't, like, and I mean, just even if that's just keeping your mental health okay and you're keeping your world together, because for everybody to be able to rebound out of this, everybody's got to be, this is the idea of why things like rent freezes and mortgage freezes and these things that can genuinely help everybody bounce back after this, you know, make sure that those people who've lost their jobs have only lost their jobs for now, because their jobs will still exist when we're over this, as opposed to the other scenario, which means that those jobs aren't there when it comes back. And that's the thing that I constantly think we're lucky, because I know eventually my job will come back and I have skills in that area that I can rebuild. But I certainly feel most for those who, if this goes on for too long, the thing that they used to do won't exist for them to do when they want to go back and do it.
Yeah, it's really a very scary time for people. I can understand having that fear. It's the 3 a.m. fear, I find. It's during the days I'm quite
Matchbox 20, you mean?
Yes.
Rob Thomas?
Of course, always. You don't even have to bring it up. You know how I
you
feel.
You say,
about
baby, it's 3 a.m. You must be crazy. That's I knew more of the lyrics to that song to continue that riff, but that is all I had.
I tell you what, though, you've really helped me out for 3 a.m. Tonight, so because I'll think of that now. But it's, you know, there has been, you know, you have those dark moments where you think, you know, I do kind of wonder, is, I'm not trying to be negative, but I'm also trying to be honest with myself. And I do wonder, you know, at 47, I've been doing this for 26 years and it's been a really good run. And what if my last gig was at the factory down in Marrickville to 5 people? And, you know, like, maybe there isn't a place for me and when everything kicks back in. I'm not saying that there won't be a place, but it is something that I have thought about. And I also just don't know, depending on how long this goes, like, who am I going to be at the end of it as well?
I mean, that could be a positive thing. Like, yeah, I mean, I think this might be an opportunity for us to have a real think about the idea that this thing that we started doing, we didn't start doing this thinking that it would be a regular income and a way to build our lives. We ran away to join the circus, and then the circus went mainstream, and we got jobs, you know, in the mainstream circus. But
yeah.
But this is such a reminder of the fact that what we do is A, irrelevant to people at the end of the day. It's not an essential service, you know, as much as we would like to pretend it is. It is a first world essential service, you know, stand-up comedy. And
we've
been very lucky to be able to say that, like, you've had 25 years working in a profession, any profession, and making your living out of it for all that time, particularly something that you love, is amazing. But to then realize that it can all just be taken away.
Yeah.
And like you said, it could be your last gig, not because you know, suddenly don't find there's a place for you in comedy, but fuck, mate, in 6 months, who knows what happens to anyone?
Right.
Like, you know, like in any way, you don't know how massively your life could change in other ways in 6 months. So, of course, we all have that thought every now and again going, was that it?
Yeah.
And then you have that, you look at your own life, like I barely toured at all last year, so there's a part of me that feels a little robbed because I was going to tour all year and I had 3 shows and all those sort of things. But there's another part of me that feels incredibly grateful that I got what I got, because I hadn't had more fun doing stand-up than I had in the first 3 months of this year. Like I did the 2 weeks of the improv show at the store that I loved, all those new comedians I got to work with, and I really loved those shows. I loved doing them, and then had a great week at Brunswick Heads, and then I'd had 2 really great weeks doing a completely different show with all this new material in Adelaide. And I was just, I'm grateful I got that.
Yeah.
Because if I have to go into a 6 month break, I'll be thinking of the version of me that did all those creative things in those 2 months and how they'll come out of this, as opposed to if it happened 3 months earlier and I've come off like a year of barely doing shows into another, you know, half a year or more of not doing shows, then suddenly at the end of that, you're like, who am I?
Yeah.
And how do I fit into this? And what do I have to say anymore that's interesting?
Yeah. It's funny, you know, you remember back at the beginning of 2017 when I had the operations for the kidney stones. And, you know, I had 3 in rapid succession, and I'd have like 1 operation and then I'd fly to Perth and do the Perth Fringe, and then I come back and have the second one, and then I came down to Melbourne, did support for you for the Stan special, and then, you know, third one, then I was off to the Adelaide Fringe. And I wish someone had told me maybe not to have them all so close together, because I didn't realize that the general anesthetic, it takes so long to get out of your system, and I'd knocked off 3 big lots of it, and it I remember doing support for you at the Comedy Theatre, and halfway through the gig, and the gig was going really well, but halfway through the gig, I had not been listening to anything I'd been saying, and I'd been doing all new material about the kidney stones, and I had this real disconnect. And the middle of 2017 was like a really dark period for me. I haven't really talked about it, but if anyone who saw the John Tilt Animus plays, that's kind of where I was, kind of pluming those depths of what I experienced. And I did self-isolate, and I was I went through a very dark period. I don't like to kind of talk about it, because there's nothing kind of more boring than someone saying, oh yeah, I was not good, but I kind of worked my way through it, and in the last kind of year, but definitely what you were getting to, the last 3 months of touring with friends and seeing friends and coming and performing and hanging out, I was really, you know, I was feeling like I was back on track. I was finally feeling like I was back on top of where I wanted to be. And I'm glad I had those 3 months, because if it, once again, isn't a long time before we get an opportunity to do anything again, at least I've got that to rest on.
So now we've got an opportunity, I think, which is to take that sort of momentum into this, in this time when we need to check. As Ice Cube famously said, hey, planet, check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Yep, he said it just like that too.
But we are in this moment now where we're going to have to think about how we come out of this.
Yeah.
And a lot of it will go back to normal, probably for bad, better than it is for good. But I think there's an opportunity here to look at, you know, this has been a test of all the things that are going to rear their ugly head because of climate change. And I think a lot of this we've failed the test. There's been some positives as well.
Yeah.
And I think that when we come out of this, we've got to use what's just happened here as a planet to get ourselves a little bit ready for the challenges that are no doubt going to face us over the next, you know, 5, 10, 20 years. You can have bad hips and also skin cancer on your face. And I think we're going to have a lot of it. I mean, this year alone, you know, if you just did a montage of the burning country and the dark skies in the city straight into the global pandemic, you're like, okay, when do the Terminators get here?
Oh, yeah.
Must be soon, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I put up a blog today saying I'm going to go to Mount Kosciuszko with a cricket bat because I'm sure there's an asteroid coming. Like, it's someone needs to get on top of this.
I mean, there is an asteroid coming.
Yes.
You know that, right? Yeah. There actually is. It's not probably going to hit us. But ordinarily, we'd probably be paying attention to something where they're like, look, it's probably not going to hit us. Yeah. And we're like, hey, when you say probably,
yeah,
are you saying there's a chance?
Yeah.
That it's going to hit us?
Like, look, like this pandemic
won't
kick in.
It won't hit us.
Yeah. I think the big lesson from all of this, and, you know, I'm sure there will be some people who might take offense to what I'm about to say, but I fully believe it, and it's science is important, and science matters, and we have to believe in science. Scientists aren't saying things because they're lining their pockets. Have you seen scientists? They are not walking down the catwalks. They are dealing with facts, and facts are independent of opinions. And if we kind of believe in these things and use them to get ourselves into a position where if something like this happens again, we know how to deal with it immediately, then I think the world will be in a better place.
Yeah, right? But it's not going to be because...
No.
We're ruled by fucking idiots. And if we trusted the scientists from the start, we could have knocked this shit on its head. But instead, yeah, every second fucking day, there's been a new message from our politicians. And, you know, the leader of the fucking free world has infected half of the rest of the fucking world because he let Americans keep getting on planes because he was pretending nobody had it in America while everybody fucking had it in America. Yeah. And now the entire city of New York City. I mean, again, talk about fucking scenes for your opening of your movie.
Oh,
you've
I know.
Got empty streets.
Yeah.
Of New York City. That is literally the sort of shot that you would be playing at the start of some apocalypse.
Yeah, it's I Am Legend. You know, it's The Walking Dead. It's Leftovers. You know, it is...
Can I just say also, I won't mention this person's name, but I have to tell this story because a dear friend who's already been mentioned on this podcast, you guys can put it together. Lima. used to go out with someone
who I
really liked.
Yeah.
So I need to point this out. Yeah. This is not me burning her. This is just a funny story.
I know.
Because she said, I hate Will Smith.
Yeah.
He's so full of himself. Look at his new film, I Am a Legend.
Yeah. You know when someone says something to you and you're not sure if they're being brilliant or just obtuse? It was right down the middle.
Yeah, that's just funny. It's not making fun of her.
No.
It's just a funny story. I Am a Legend.
I Am a Legend.
I think of that every time I see I Am Legend advertised on anything. I always think of that. I Am a Legend. That's what I call it.
With that accent as well, right?
Oh, man.
So funny. Have you seen someone put up a – I saw it online. I don't know where I saw it, but someone put up all the surveillance cameras from around the world and what they're filming. And it's like, you know, the Fontana di Trevi, nobody there. Venice, nobody there. You know, and it's just, and it's, I have to be honest, there was something very soothing about it.
Have you done what a lot of Australians have done during this time? Watch the movie Contagion.
Nah, I've already seen it. It's you know, it's a really well-made movie. But you know what I don't need to do? Watch Contagion. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not going to inform me. Like, to be honest, I think Gwyneth Paltrow is a good actor. And I think the scene where she, you know, spoilers, disappears very quickly is some pretty good acting. But I don't need to. You know, what? I watched three movies that I have pretty much no interest in watching. And it was fascinating to me because I was halfway through the second one going, why am I watching these? I went back and watched the original Star Wars trilogy.
So when you say the original, do you mean 4, 5, and 6?
Yeah, 4, 5, and 6. And I have honestly not watched those movies in decades. But I reckon I was looking for comfort. And I could just sit there and watch that and think, wow, these movies are a bit strange. And, oh, yeah, I can see why I liked that bit as a kid. And, oh, that hasn't aged well. And, oh, why did they add that? And, oh, George Lucas owes everything to John Williams in that music. Do you know what I mean? So I did not need to see rewatch Contagion at this point.
So I rewatched Contagion.
Oh, yeah. It's a surprise.
In retrospect, that is a great film because it is so, like, Neil deGrasse Tyson, you know how one of his favorite things to do is, watch space movies and spoil them for everybody.
Yeah.
Couldn't do that in space. Anyway, this is why people don't trust scientists. Bloody Neil deGrasse Tyson telling us our movies are no good. Anyway, he would have had a bloody erection watching Contagion because it is so on the money about how it fucking happens and how every step of people denying it and trying to cover it up and say it's ignoring the scientists and thinking people are being alarmists, and then suddenly it unfolds that the people who are being alarmists were actually right in the first place, and if we'd done what they'd said like a week ago, everything would be much better than it is right now.
Oh, yeah. I literally read an interview with the writer of the movie, which I think is Scott Burns, and it was from a few weeks ago, and they spoke to him. Contagion was starting to get some traffic going, and, he was damning of the government and its response then, and he was saying, we weren't being prescient. We were literally taking hard science and facts and turning it into a thriller. And, you know, There were lessons right there.
Yeah, to make his Gwyneth Paltrow movie, he did more proper scientific research than the governments of the world did to stop this actual contagion that was happening in the world.
Right. It's got my favourite ever moment by, I think it's the best acting I've ever seen by Matt Damon, and I'm a fan of Matt's, but the moment when, spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen it, but when he finds out that his wife is dead, and the way he says, well, Can I speak to her?
Yeah.
And it is, the way he is in shock is unbelievable.
Yeah. I think a lot of people do a good job in that movie. It's actually it is probably not the movie, if you are anyway spooked by what is happening in the world right now and you are not trying to lean in that on purpose, which obviously a lot of people are anyway, but I think that's what I was looking for. I was looking for something. I was like, I needed the feeling of, I shouldn't be watching this. Should I be watching this?
Yep.
And then I was taken by the fact that it was an extremely well-made film. So I rated it much more highly now. And so it's gone back to the top of the charts.
Yes.
Old Scotty Burns, right?
Yeah.
So what's he been up to post-Contagion? Has he had much of a... showbiz career, Scotty Burns. He doesn't strike me as one of the most, like, well-known directors in Hollywood. But he might be doing stuff that I'm not watching, but what's he been up to, Scott Burns?
I'm not sure. Let's do a bit of half-assed internet here.
You do a little bit of Googling of Scotty Burns, because the question I'm going to pose to you is this. Say Scotty Burns gets an author selling a book. Every time that movie gets downloaded, suddenly Scotty Burns gets, 25 cents in his directing account or whatever.
Right.
Does he have mixed feelings about what's going on? Because no one knows more than him.
Yeah.
How dangerous this can be. He is one of the best informed people on this subject. He made a movie that is a warning against exactly what we're going through right now.
Yeah.
But he's making a lot of money out of it right now because a lot of people are watching his movie. Like, is there just a little bit of him that has mixed feelings about? He's like, oh, well, I guess it's paid off for Scotty.
Yeah. It's paid off for Scotty. That's the doco that'll be made about it. Well, 2 years before Contagion, he wrote The Informant, which is the really funny film with Matt Damon. And he also worked on The Bourne Ultimatum.
Okay.
And it says here, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. The Planet of the Apes series of movies that came out recently, surprisingly good, I think.
Fell off a little at the end in a way that I was not expecting because they maintained being good for so long that it surprised me when they eventually were just fine.
Yeah, I know what you mean. He supposedly worked on the new James Bond, No Time.
You know what
to
it
die.
Felt like, actually, in the when the last Planet of the Apes came out? I was like, oh, Have we stopped trying? Because I was really liking this. I would have been happy for you to... Like, that was my feeling. It was like, I've always liked Planet of the Apes. It's one of my... I watched all of them when I was young, and just that whole... I don't know. There was just something about it that captured my attention, because they're not particularly great movies, but just something about that world I really enjoyed. I don't like space films. Does that count? No, because it's not really in space.
No.
Spoilers, guys. It was Earth all along.
But, what? So you know what's funny about that? So from when I was a kid, back in the day when you couldn't watch a movie when you wanted to, Mum used to say to me, "You're going to love Planet of the Apes. It has the greatest ending of you're going to lose your mind." And, you know, tried to borrow it on video. Maybe it was even before video. I think it was before video. So we're just waiting for it to turn up on TV again. And it was in the TV week. It was coming up on the Saturday. And Mum was really excited. And my grandfather literally said, "Oh, can't believe it was Earth the whole time." And that was like, and you know, when you watch a balloon deflate, that was physically what my mum just did in her chair. And
I had a sense with the new ones where I was like, "Oh, you've done all this work creating this sort of new take on this, and then you've just kind of, someone's taken their eye off the ball at some stage, because you could have actually kept making really good Planet of the Apes films, probably."
Yeah, it would have been. I would like to have seen what they. I would have gone in more an area where they develop their own society and what kind of comes from that. You know,
what if the apes get caught in the middle of some sort of worldwide pandemic?
Oh yeah,
suddenly
right?
All the apes have to self isolate.
A lot of shots of Andy Serkis looking sad by himself next to a tree.
Finally wins an Oscar.
Oh yeah, he deserves it.
It's just shot. It's just shot in one room. It's Andy Serkis in one room. You only see him. He's in self isolation during a pandemic. But he's an ape.
Yeah, he's reading the equivalent of John Steinbeck, The Bananas of Wrath. It was almost a pun. I couldn't quite get there.
So what have you been doing to pass your time during, like, other than we are watching old Star Wars? What are you doing in a productive way now?
So the first thing that happened, and I don't know if you are similar to this, it's suddenly like, oh wow, I can do all of these things that I've always wanted to do. You know, regardless of any anxiety about the situation, it's like, okay, here's a whole lot of things I want to do. And then you look at that list of things.
Well, the good news for me, Justin, is one of those things was default on my mortgage.
Right.
So I'm really excited about this time that's coming up.
Congratulations. This is exciting.
Yeah, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. Yeah. It'll be all good, guys. Look at your list.
Oh, yeah. So and it's a bit overwhelming, because you look at your list and you go, I don't quite know where to start. So I essentially spent last week just kind of putting things in place, lifestyle-wise, etc., letting things sit in the back of my head, and now I have an idea of what I'm going to be doing with some new podcasts, some written stuff, etc., blah, blah, blah. But to get the ball rolling, I thought I would do this little thing. And I didn't want to just do this for my own entertainment. I deliberately did this to throw out there for everyone who listens on FOFOP to do their version of what I'm about to talk about.
Great.
So it's so if people are feeling a bit stressed, etc., if they would like to join in with this, don't write to us and say, "Why'd you do that?" No. Don't be negative. Say, "Oh, you did that. Well, this is my version of that." Do you know what I mean? So
yeah, I understand. It's like it's a little podcast chain letter.
Yeah, right. And then we can all join in. And I want to hear what people what people's thoughts are and what they want to do. So anyway, on the weekend, I crafted a comfort music festival that I would want to go to, and I've called it Hammo's Big Day In. It's quarantine, baby, and I've put it up on Spotify, so people can go and have a listen. And there's a blog at my site where they can read my little thoughts that go along with it. But this is my
so
little...
tell me the name of it again. Just repeat the whole thing.
It's Hammo's Big Day In, and this one's called It's Quarantine, Baby.
I mean, I love it. I wonder if the organisers of the Big Day Out might have a problem with it from a legality point of view. But anyway, look.
Well, I'm not making money from this.
Oh, yeah, good point. That's okay.
And, you know, like if Clawson wanted to do it, it could be Charlie's Big Day In. Do you know what I mean? It's like whoever. But
no, I think it was more the Big Day In bit that the Big Day Out organisers might have a problem with rather than your name at the start. But sure. Okay, no worries.
Mate, I'm keeping the flame alive.
How many days is this festival?
Well, so this is part of it. I'm 47. It's one day. I don't have enough energy to go to two or three days worth of a festival. And I've decided it's going to be at Adelaide Oval. I'm going because the venue looks great. And I'm capping it at 20,000 because I want to be able to get around and get some snacks. And I want people to be able to sit down and have a really good time. And it's going to kick off at 3 p.m. because I know people have got shit to do. And they'll be wrapped. It's done by 10 p.m.
Oh.
So, because we got stuff to do. But it is...
Have you thought about... So, again, I'm just just suggestions.
Yeah.
The best music festival that I ever went to from a timing point of view was Primavera in Spain, in Barcelona.
Oh, yeah.
And they start... The first acts sort of start around 6 o'clock at night.
Right.
And then it goes through, the headliners come on around midnight, and then it goes through until like 3-4 in the morning. And then everybody goes home and sleep. Like, this is like a 3-day festival or whatever. But then you go home and sleep all day, and then you go in and you sort of watch bands all night. And it means everyone plays in the dark, and everyone's kind of already having dark energy. So have you any thoughts of that, or is that just too late in the day?
No. Well, this is, I definitely thought about all of these things, but this is the festival that I would like to go to at the moment because I want comfort. I literally want comfort.
No. All right.
I'm sure there's going to be an aggressive one that I'll put together. There's going to be one that starts at 1 a.m., but this is comfort.
Yeah. Okay. Nice.
So all the acts, there's seven acts on. They all get 45 minutes each, except for the headline act, who gets an hour. And the headline act is the second to last act.
Okay. So there's like a warm down act as well, is that?
Yeah. Someone who is fun to take us out into the night wherever anyone wants to go.
Okay. That's actually pretty good for, like you said, for being calm. Instead of like revving people up to a peak, which is what normally you do with a headliner, and then just releasing them on the world with all that sort of energy, you're kind of decompressing them.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's a festival for people who are 47.
I like it. So far, so good.
Do you want to take a guess at anyone who might be on?
Current living artists, or are they anyone from history?
It is anyone from history, and it is certain periods in their career.
All right. David Bowie?
Oh, that's interesting. Yep. Who else?
Elvis Costello?
Yeah. You don't know me. You don't know me. Take a third guess.
All right, I'll try to pick something more obscure that like give me something that might be a bit more of a that is definitely you, but like maybe is there a certain genre or a certain style, a thing that's particularly stands out that I could have a guess at?
I reckon it's a it's a woman.
Okay, yeah.
And I guess you'd say it's a little bit electronic, maybe. I'm not sure if that's the correct description, but.
Oh, okay.
Do you want to just think about it, and we'll.
Yeah. All right.
So this is 2 o'clock to this is 3 o'clock for 45 minutes. Elvis Costello and the Attraction. I'm starting off with Elvis. I'm starting off with Elvis. I'm literally starting off with old school Elvis. Songs last about 3 minutes.
Felt like a good daytime sort of act as well.
Because there's, you know, because all the songs are, you know, full of energy and quick, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. You get about 13 songs from Elvis
no
in 45 minutes. Well, look, to be honest, I timed it. It came in at 41, so I think there's 4 minutes of banter. But I reckon he is there to play songs and get on with it. He starts with Uncomplicated. You get things like Oliver's Army. You get Shipbuilding. You get Accidents Will Happen. And he... His second to last song is I Want You, so it's a he pulls the pace right down, and then he finishes with What's So Funny About Peace, Love and Understanding. Feels like a good 45 minutes from Elvis Costello.
Good start to the day.
Yeah. You're feeling good, right?
Yeah, I'm feeling good. I mean, there'll be some people who'll be like, that's all I need from today.
So yeah,
Elvis
for sure.
Costello, I'm going home.
This has turned out really well, right?
Not sticking around for any of this other malarkey.
Yeah.
I heard there's some female electronica act coming on later, and I don't want that at all.
Look, you've always got to have one act on that takes people by surprise who will possibly be won over. Anyway.
Yes. No, no. So we go, I can't wait.
So at 4 o'clock, we go from Elvis Costello into Crowded House, first two albums in that era.
Good choice.
Start off a little bit soft with When You Come, then go straight into Mean to Me, Sister Madly, Now We're Getting Somewhere. What would you... I felt like you had to finish with either Better Be Home Soon or Don't Dream It's Over. I picked one. What would you have picked?
I'd drop Sister Madly from the set and play them both.
You dropped Sister Madly?
Yeah.
It's a fun song.
It's not one of my favorite Crowded House songs.
Oh, really?
And those other two are two of the greatest songs that have ever been written in the history of fucking songs. So.
Well, both songs are there, but which one would you have finished with?
Oh, okay. So
they're the last two songs. So we can keep Sister Madly.
So better be home soon, or
don't dream it's over.
I would say I'd finish with Don't Dream It's Over because it's only the second act of the day.
Yeah.
Like, Better Be Home Soon. If Crowded House were your last band that were playing after your headliners, you close with Better Be Home Soon, right?
Right. So,
you know, but like, no, this is Don't Dream It's Over because it's earlier on in the day.
That is literally the reasoning I used for finishing with Don't Dream It's Over.
Drop Sister Madly and Neil does Message to My Girl on the piano by himself.
So he throws in a split ends.
Yeah. That was one of my favorite things that Crowded House would do. I saw Crowded House a lot live.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
In Canberra in the day in particular. And Neil would sometimes play Message to My Girl on the keyboard just by himself. And it was always one of the great... Message to My Girl is one of the great all-time songs. That's one of my favorite songs of all time. In fact, it's one of those ones that I forget how much I love until I'm reminded of that song. And then I will, after this, have to go and actually listen to Message to My Girl again now because it's such a good song.
It's also around the period where Neil Finn starts to grow into the artist that creates Crowded House, don't you think?
Right. Absolutely.
The last big split ends song as well, also it sounds very Crowded House in retrospect. Can't think of it off the top of my head, but it'll come to me. So anyway, so that's our first two. So then at 5 o'clock, I'm pulling one out for you that is going to, I reckon it'll take you by surprise.
Give me a clue.
Okay, it's she is English. She's had one really big album. She's had a bit of struggles in recent times, but this is when she brought out her album, and she was an English soul singer.
Oh,
and her music was one of her songs was used in an advert for Mad Men.
Oh, okay. Well, I can see the link now. No, I mean, Amy Winehouse has had more than a bad trot, so
yeah.
It's probably not her. No, who is it?
Duffy.
Duffy.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So a bit of Rock Ferry, Warwick Avenue. This is around 5 o'clock. Do you know what I mean? Like you've been dancing with Costello. You've been dancing with Crowded House.
If you're old, you've just seen Elvis Costello in Crowded House, and you're wrapped.
Yes.
And you can fucking piss off to the bar for a Pinot Noir while Duffy's on, and just listen to Duffy in the background.
Right. You know. Well, you want to watch it? Like, you don't make... Like, you know what? This is my festival. They're bringing the drinks to you.
Well, yeah, sure. They do that at Primavera. They come around with, like, you know, beer things and just fill up your beer. Oh. It is a very loose festival. Not very chilled, though.
Right.
So people do drugs out in the open a lot, yeah. Like right. A lot. But no, I like the idea that, you know, you wander off after you've seen Crowded House, you wander off to the bar, you get your Pinot Noir, and you hear Duffy in the background and you have a little chat with your friends and talk about how good Crowded House were, but you are intrigued by what you're hearing in the background.
Yeah.
And then you drift with your Pinot Noir, or maybe you get a second Pinot Noir and you take that one out and you watch, say, the last three or four songs of Duffy and you're like, oh, you know what? I'm going to check out Duffy's music, you know, on the way home.
You definitely want to see the last two. She finishes with Mercy and Distant Dreamer. So you'll be wrapped. You'll be wrapped. It finishes big, right?
Okay.
Next up is Arcade Fire.
Oh, good choice.
First two albums, but in my world, they're just starting to throw a couple of songs out from the suburbs. So I've got them starting off with Neighborhood One, The Tunnels, and then you've got Keep the Car Running. The two songs from the suburbs, you've got Suburban War and Month of May. And it finishes with The Well and the Lighthouse, Wake Up and No Cars Go.
I mean, I think The Suburbs is actually my favourite Arcade Fire album.
Yes. Oh, same.
Look, it's partly because once I was coming down from acid and I could not sleep and that album had just come out and I lay on a bed listening to that album over and over and over again, and kind of like I had an intense soul connection with it, put it that way.
Yeah, right.
And I find it hard to separate that experience from, you know, subjectively looking at that album. I think it's their greatest album, but fuck, they've got like six or seven songs before that are six or seven of the better of their songs. Like, you know, The Suburbs is a completely brilliant album, but there are some cracking songs that they have in their set. So what are they finishing with?
They're finishing their last three songs are The Well and the Lighthouse, Wake Up and No Cars Go.
So they're not finishing with Wake Up. They're finishing with No Cars Go.
Yeah. Controversial, right?
I mean, I'm happy either way. You know what? I'm happy for them to do a big version of Wake Up.
Yeah.
As if you think that's going to be the final song, and then you get No Cars Go.
Yeah,
that was the
reasoning. By the way, at some point when I do another concert, I reckon one of the concerts will be Arcade Fire doing the whole album of The Suburbs for their spot.
That is definitely one of those ones that, you know, where artists go back and they do one of their albums. If I hear Arcade Fire doing The Suburbs, particularly if that guarantees that I won't have to hear any of their new shit.
I know. Look, I'm all for people, you know, like I love artists who grow and find new places to experiment, etc. Yeah. And I respect it and I back it 100%.
I don't want to fucking listen to it.
Oh, God. So disappointing.
If it was guaranteed that I was just going to hear The Suburbs, first person who buys a ticket to that gig is me.
Yeah, with 15 kilograms of acid.
I was going to say, I have to work out how to get some acid. That was a long time ago. I was a very different person.
Yeah. So this is the artist that we couldn't quite work out how to get it across. This is the one where people will either be right behind it or they'll check out. But I think
so she's
always
a female artist.
Yep.
American, Australian, British.
Well, as soon as I tell you where she's from, you'll know exactly who it is.
Canadian. Oh, Bjork.
It's Bjork. Yep. I always liked songs of hers. And when we were at the Big Day Out in Melbourne and I was, you know, I was... I'd heard she'd put on good shows and I was curious to see her, and I thought she was out of control. I thought it was one of the all-time great concerts that I'd seen, because it took me by surprise as well. And she was so powerful and the music was so dramatic and so full. And every time she'd finish a song, she'd always, all the music would just stop and you'd just hear this very quiet and gentle, thank you. And then she would go straight into the next song. I've got her starting with Unravel. I've got Army of Me, Human Behaviour, Hunter, and it finishes with Hyper Ballad and Bachelorette, all in 45 minutes.
I am disappointed that I don't like Bjork. Like, Bjork seems like one of those things that I should like, you know, like,
right.
She ticks a lot of boxes for me, and the idea of her, I love.
Yeah.
Like, I'm totally into the fact that, you know, an artist like that exists in the world, and I could not, I think, yeah, the world's a more wonderful place because of it. And I wish there were more artists like that, but for whatever reason, her art that she produces, her music at the very least, is just not for me. It's just never, but, and I've tried it. I've seen her live. I've listened to albums. It's just not my thing.
Yeah. Maybe this is your Pinot Noir time.
Oh, no, I'm getting something to eat by now. Yeah.
I mean, you're hungry.
I'm hungry. And Bjork's on. I'm bloody.
Look, I know she is one of those artists where it's like if someone's not into her, you completely, yep, I get that. But I think she's a genius. I think she has a singular vision. And if you're not on board, you're not on board. But it's
that's the thing with singular visions, right?
Yeah.
The whole point of them is that they're not for everyone.
Yeah.
So if they're not for you, like, I mean, maybe it's because I work in an industry where I'm always surprised that somebody needs to tell me that I'm not for them.
Right.
I'm very aware that I'm not for everyone. If I was for everyone, I'd be living in a fucking gold house in the fucking clouds. Do you know what I mean? Like,
right.
You know, like literally just by sheer economics, I see how many people buy tickets to my shows. I'm for some people.
Yeah.
But I'm not for everyone. You know, no one is for everybody. Yeah. And like, so I'm very big on maybe when I was younger, I think I was much more defined by what it was I didn't like.
Oh,
you know,
for sure.
So yeah, you would say, I hate this and this is rubbish and this shouldn't exist and I think this is better than this and all that sort of attitude. But somewhere along the way, and it feels like it's been for quite a long time now, I just stopped defining myself by what it was that I didn't like and started trying to define myself by what it was that I did like. And so if something that I don't like exists, I just am so much more forgiving of it, good, bad or indifferent, where I'm like,
right,
whatever, you know. Like, you couldn't pay me to watch an episode of Married at First Sight. Someone had it on in the house the other night and everyone was laughing along. And I just, like, I walked by for like 3 minutes, I reckon I saw of it. And I was just like, this is not for me. if there was a food stand here, I could go and get some food and maybe grab a cheeky Pinot Noir. This would be the time I would be doing it.
There's someone who runs a Pinot Noir snack van who really missed out on some sweet coin at that person's house.
If they'd been, yeah, in this environment, they should have been in a delivery van outside my house. They would have been absolutely fine.
That would have been good. But I agree with you. You know, I often get made fun of for liking everything, which is not true. I don't like everything, but when I like something, that's what I talk about. I'd rather talk about that than the stuff that annoys me or isn't in my wheelhouse.
I won't go into this example very much, but somebody was giving me a gentle rap over the knuckles the other day for being perhaps too generous to some people who perhaps weren't deserving of my generosity.
Right.
And I was just like, I'd just rather err on the side that people of like being generous, like, and try to like imagine the best in people than get bogged down in, like, they were sort of saying to me, oh, this thing about this person and this thing about this person. And I was like, oh yeah, I just don't really hear those things because they're not the conversations I'm having. So sometimes when there's gossip about a person or people have firm opinions about something, I don't have those firm opinions about them because I'm not involved in the conversation where the firm opinions were formed and everybody decided what their firm opinions were.
Right.
I was just judging it based on my interactions with that person, which had been quite pleasant and nice. And I, it was anyway. Like,
and that
again, I don't want to go into it too much, but it struck me as such an example of, oh yeah, right, okay. I guess I just didn't. I didn't go to the meeting where we all decided that thing, and so I was wrong. It's like when you watch a movie without reading any of the reviews or something,
right? Right.
Like you can, like you don't know that everybody hates Birds of Prey or whatever. That's a bad example, but like, yeah. And then you watch it, and you go, "Oh my god, this movie's amazing!" Like, why isn't everybody talking about this movie? And then you go and read a review, and you go, "Oh, did everyone decide we hated this movie? I'm so glad I didn't know that before I watched this movie that I actually really liked."
Guess what? I just won because I had a good time watching it.
Right.
All right. So we're now at 8 o'clock. This is our headliner. Mm. Yes, it is David Bowie. What era?
So we're talking. Well, this is your Calm Festival.
This is my. I'm in a dancey kind of mood, but not, you know.
Is it like? I mean, you've got a soft spot for the '80s,
right? When I first saw him.
Is it somewhere in the '80s?
Yeah, completely right. It's all songs from the 1983 Serious Moonlight Tour, and I've only taken songs from the concert that I attended in November at Adelaide Oval. But I put them in my own order. I've been a little bit cheeky. I've started with.
So he's recreating his famous Adelaide Oval set at the Adelaide Oval
in the order that I want. But I've started with something a little bit different. I've started with the Giorgio Moroder version of Cat People that you hear in Inglourious Basterds, and then we go straight into Rebel Rebel, Look Back in Anger. We get a little bit of China Girl, a bit of Ashes to Ashes. We get Life on Mars, and we finish with Modern Love. He gets an hour because he's the headliner, and it'll be great, and we have a really good time, and we're wrapped. Yep.
I'm happy with that.
And then at 9:15...
I'm full. I've had a few wines. I've had a nice meal during Bjork.
Oh,
I'm ready.
You're good.
Yeah.
And then to see us out is Curtis Mayfield.
Oh.
So starting off with Don't Worry If There's a Hell Below, We're All Going to Go. We get Freddy's Dead. We get Pusher Man. We get Kung Fu. We get an extended version of Move On Up as the second to last song. And then, like we did with Arcade Fire, moving Wake Up, and then you get No Cars Go, we get Move On Up here, and we get We're Gonna Have Peace as our final song that gets us out of Adelaide Oval at 10:15.
It's not bad.
10.
Back in the hotel by 10:30.
Right.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's good.
Fun to do. I'm going to put it up it's up on Spotify. So if people want to have a listen but you know, I want, you know, if people have time and have the inclination, give us your version of a big day in. Do you want something that's a rocking festival? Do you want an all Australian festival? I'm going to put up a couple more when the mood takes me. So I'm really curious to hear what other people want to put together as a festival, and it's their rules.
I might do a hip hop festival.
Great.
At some stage, I'll sit down and I'll, because I have decided that my favorite style of music, it probably has been for a very long time. I mean, one of the first tapes I ever had was Run DMC and Beastie Boys. And One Side and the Other, Raising Hell and License Deal. And so, like, I liked hip-hop music from when I was pretty young. But of late, there's been a whole load of documentaries made about, you know, the particular era of hip-hop that I like. And I have watched every single one of those documentaries. And there's a Beastie Boys one that Spike Jonze made coming out in, like, 3 weeks from now or something like that.
Oh, right, yeah.
And, yeah, with the remaining two Beastie Boys, and Spike Jonze made this fucking Beastie Boys.
Great.
Anyway, so that's going to be amazing as well. And so it's also made me rediscover all that music and then kind of rediscover discover some newer music in that genre. I've been loving it. So I might put together my favorite, because the great thing about a hip-hop festival is I can put people on who are going to collaborate together.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's a great idea.
Like, if we get Dre and we get Tupac and we get Eminem and you get, like, Ice Cube and whatever, like, all of them can do shit together.
Yes. Like,
yes. Anyway, that's what I'm going to do. That'll be my mind.
Gets the head rolling, right? It's fun.
Who gets to headline If you're talking about the history of hip hop, and you're talking about the act that gets the headline, the history of hip hop gig, what is the fucking band that get to headline the history of fucking hip hop show? Like that's a pretty big. I mean, immediately you kind of think Eminem, right? Like it's got to be Eminem. He's the biggest rapper of all time, I guess. But like, that's an obvious choice. But would there be like a better choice than that? Like, is it NWA at their prime, or is it like the Wu-Tang Clan, when the Wu-Tang Clan were actually, you know, kind of the Wu-Tang Clan, you know, Old Dirty Bastard, the whole thing, or Run DMC, Boys. The Beastie Boys would definitely be on the lineup without a doubt. You'd have to, because they were great live too. They were very good live act. Snoop, does Snoop get, well, if you got Dre there, you can get Snoop coming out to do a couple of songs with Dre. So you do a Dre set where you get Snoop, you get Eminem, you get 50 Cent to do something. Like, you can get, yeah, so Dre's just everyone featuring Dre. Maybe that's your headline slot. You get Dr. Dre to headline, but it's like Dr. Dre with Eminem and with Snoop Dogg and with, anyway, there you go. I've almost programmed my festival.
It's
the Roots can chill you out on the way home. We'll put the Wu-Tang Clan on before we do Dr. Dre and the Best Of. We'll put Eminem on before Dre. So Eminem does it like a slot of his own, and then Dre comes out, and then Eminem comes back and does like Forgot About Dre or something with Dr. Dre. Wu-Tang Clan start the day. Oh man, I'm running out of time. You got to have Run DMC, and you would have to have
Your festival. It can go for 2 days. I just picked one, you know, there's no rules.
It's going to have to, actually, because I've got too many more people to fit into this.
I looked up who I think should be your headliner. Can you read that?
Is it Criss Cross?
Yeah. No.
Criss Cross would be good for a bit. Make you jump. Black Eyed Peas, but they're only allowed to play stuff off their first two albums.
it's your festival. You get to book what you want.
None of that new shit. Yeah. You can't come dressed in your space uniforms, you fucking idiots. You got to be that good band.
I don't give a shit about your lumps.
Oh man, Run the Jewels definitely. All right, anyway, this is good. I'm enjoying playing this game already. See, this is how fun this game is to play. You can make up your own version at home. Justin Hamilton, hopefully this worked. Hopefully this is an experiment to see if we could, you know,
do this like this.
Turn it into a podcast. But if you enjoyed this, you know, maybe Justin and I could do some more of these. And, Justin's going to be doing a lot of writing and podcasting of his own. And so maybe this could be like a semi-regular thing we do if you're enjoying it. So if you do enjoy it, let us know and pass it around and, you know, tell people that FOFOP's back. It's nice to be back.
Yeah. We're getting to 300.
But yeah, slowly. But we're getting there. We might sprint. We might have a little quarantine sprint. Who knows?
Quarantine sprint.
Thank you very much, Justin.
Thank you.